Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching, so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Tired of pickup truck bed chaos? Meet Decked, game-changing USA-made full bed-length drawers for tools and gear. Waterproof, dustproof, lockable, secure. Whether you're working, hunting, fishing, camping, or just getting out of town. And introducing Decked Deco Cases. Tough, modular, problem-solving cases built for the truck, job site, campsite, or garage. Say goodbye to random bins and tie-downs. Order now at Decked.com/iHeart for free shipping. Decked, your truck, your rules. Decked.com/iHeart.
You're listening to the second and final part of Unexplained, Season 7, Episode 17, What Lies in the Long Grass. British journalist Tim Leach moved from London in the 1960s to study journalism at the University of Rhodesia, renamed the University of Zimbabwe in 1980. By 1994, with almost 20 years' experience as a reporter and camera operator, he'd risen to become the BBC's Bureau in Chief of Southern Africa. He'd covered some of the most devastating events imaginable, from war in Angola to genocide in Rwanda. In the afternoon of September 16, 1994, Tim receives a call regarding a strange incident that has just occurred at the aerial school in Rua. Tim immediately calls his friend and UFO researcher, Cynthia Hind. Recognizing the potential for a great story, the pair agree to investigate it. With that day being a Friday, however, they have to wait until the following Monday to scope it out. Never one to sit on her hands, within minutes of the call, Cynthia is back on the phone. After making a few more calls, she tracks down a number for Alison, the parent who was staffing the tuck shop in the playground when the children claimed the incident occurred. A moment later, and Cynthia is talking directly to Alison, and then her 10-year-old daughter, Fifi. As Cynthia listened with a warmth and patience that few of the other adults had given her, Fifi slowly opens up, carefully filling Cynthia in with as many details as she could remember. Like how a strong wind had swept across the playground just as the bright light had dropped into the trees. She also tells Cynthia about the peculiar little men in black suits, although she hadn't seen them herself. 11-year-old Barry and 12-year-old Fungi, however, who Cynthia also spoke to that night, both attested to having seen the beings. The boys described them as having large black eyes, shaped like rugby balls. Both also claimed to experience a weird slowing down of time when they drew close to what they referred to as the ship. When Cynthia finally got off the phone later that evening, it was hard for her to resist the thought that she was quite possibly sitting on one of the most extraordinary close encounters of the third kind the world had ever known. The following Monday, Tim and Cynthia, accompanied by Gunter Hoffer, a friend of Cynthia's and also a fellow UFO researcher, drive east out of Harare. heading deep into the pale grass and farmlands of the surrounding countryside, they arrive finally at Ariel School. After being greeted by headteacher Colin Mackey, they are promptly led into the staff room, where some of the teachers have assembled to take them through the events of the previous week. None of the teachers want to believe for a second that a UFO really landed in the school playground, but neither can they answer the question of how 60 young school kids could even begin to coordinate a hoax like this, if that's what it is. Then Cynthia is handed the drawings. Tim films her as she examines them one by one. She is instantly struck by the level of detail, but also the subtle differences in each one. This, she believes, is strong evidence that the children haven't concocted the story together. A short time later, 6 children from 7th grade, the oldest group in the school, are brought into the small, whitewashed room to speak with Cynthia. Mr. Mackey instructs them to take a seat along the back wall. Cynthia waits for them to settle, then asks each of them if they had definitely seen something, to which they all reply, yes, and nod enthusiastically. The following exchanges with Cynthia are taken verbatim from Tim Leach's film of the interviews. The first to give their account is Nathaniel. Did it have a shape? Asks Cynthia. Nathaniel thinks for a moment. It had a long top and a platform coming round the sides, he says, as he draws a saucer-like shape with his hands in the air. Then 12-year-old Luke, sitting on Nathaniel's left, breaks in. I didn't see the spaceship, but I saw the little guy. He was all in black and looked like he had long hair. Could you see his face? Asks Cynthia. No, he says softly. And why was he among the trees? It was just like a shadow, says one of the other boys, jumping in now. And what's your name? Says Cynthia. Trevor. And you also saw this creature? Yes, we were all there. Did you see it land? I just saw flashes on the side of my eye. That's really all I saw. You didn't see anything on the ground? No, he says quietly. As Cynthia continues to engage with the pupils, one boy, Daniel, who's been close to bursting with excitement as he waits for his chance to speak, goes next. I saw this silver thing in the trees, with this one thing sitting on the side and another running up and down the top. It almost looked like a real person, except it was a bit more round, he says, squeezing his waist. Then it was Emily's turn. At first, I thought it was a boy from the compound just playing. They had longish hair and it was all black, and they had big black eyes. They kind of turned around and stared, then they went back to a kind of ship. There was one big one, with a few little ones scattered about. Cynthia asks her to show her how big exactly were the eyes. Emily brings her hands up to her face, and pinching her fingers and thumbs together, holds them over her eyes. They were oval, like this, she says. Were you afraid? Asks Cynthia. Yes, she says, smiling anxiously. And what did you think it was? Well, everybody was saying they were UFOs. Were you influenced by what the other children said? Asks Cynthia. Emily thinks for a moment. She dips her head down to the side, then looks back at Cynthia. Sort of. But I did definitely see what I saw. Finally, Cynthia turns to Charity, who has stood to the side of the others. And what did you see? She asks. I saw something silver on the ground, among the trees, and a person in black. That's all I saw. And what did the silver thing look like? Asked Cynthia. It looked like a saucer, but the shape wasn't really round. Had you heard about UFOs before this? No. Were you afraid? Yes, she says quietly, and turns her eyes to the ground. Tim, who's been filming the entire exchange, does his best to keep the camera steady as all the hairs rise up on the back of his neck. As a veteran journalist of some of the worst and complex human conflicts imaginable, he thought he'd seen it all. He knew what deception looked like, but as he watches the children's faces closely through the lens of the camera, he sees only honesty and sincerity. Whatever it was that happened, he thinks, they really did see something out there.
Tired of pickup truck bed chaos? Meet Decked, game-changing USA-made full bed-length drawers for tools and gear. Waterproof, dustproof, lockable, secure. Whether you're working, hunting, fishing, camping, or just getting out of town. And introducing Decked Deco Cases. Tough, modular, problem-solving cases built for the truck, job site, campsite, or garage. Say goodbye to random bins and tie-downs. Order now at Decked.com/iHeart for free shipping. Decked, your truck, your rules. Decked.com/iHeart.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful Beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb. Tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
After meeting with the children, Cynthia suggests they venture out to the playground and examine the apparent landing area for any radioactive traces. Mr. Mackey asks 12-year-old Guy and Fungi, who Cynthia had spoken to on the Friday evening, to lead them out. As Tim follows them all with his camera, the group make their way into the playground, while behind them, faces cram into the classroom windows as the children fight for a glimpse of the TV crew. Stepping from the sheltered area into the wider dirt flat, 12-year-old Guy recounts his experience of the event. He says he first noticed a small group of children pointing at something in the tall grass at the edge of the playing area. He thought they were messing around, or that someone had been hurt. Being one of the taller children, he was able to push to the front easily, which, he said, as the group neared the spot, was when he saw it. Guy points toward a place in the shade of some gum trees, where he claimed he saw the large, silvery, round object and another smaller object just to the right of it. Some of the children had started walking towards the larger one, he explains, when the being climbed out of it. Cynthia listens intently as Guy takes his time between questions, seemingly still wrestling with what exactly it was that he'd seen that day. At some point, Guy continues, he noticed that two of the younger girls had started to cry. He watched as they grew increasingly frightened before running away to the back of the playground. He noticed others, however, who were also crying, that seemed rooted to the spot with fear. Then someone said the word, Tokoloshe. Before long, it was spreading around the group, murmured on the lips of the tear-streaked and trembling children. It wouldn't be until later that day that Guy found out what it meant. In Zulu mythology, the Tokoloshe is a short, malicious water demon with long hair and glowing eyes that can be summoned to inflict grave harm on its victims. One local story has it that many years ago, a young woman, wearing 9 bracelets on her arm, was bathing in a river a few hundred miles east of Harare when she was attacked by a Tokoloshe. The creature tore off her arm and threw it into the water. Although most doubt the existence of the Tokoloshe, in 1924, so the story goes, a prospector named Captain Valentine was searching a stretch of river east of Harare when he discovered the remains of a human arm. When he apparently pulled it from the silt, he was amazed to find there were 9 metal bracelets wrapped around it. When young Guy finishes his account, Fungi leads Cynthia and the others to the exact spot where the craft had supposedly landed. There, he explains how after the event, some of the students examined the area with one of their teachers. They apparently found what looked like 6 burn marks on the grass, and strangely, hundreds of dead ants scattered about. Cynthia's friend Gunther pulls out a Geiger counter and directs the probe towards the ground, but finds no evidence of radiation. Over the next few weeks, news of the peculiar event at the little rural school in Zimbabwe spreads across the globe, with reporters from the Netherlands, the UK's BBC and South African TV flocking to the region to meet with the children. At first, the children welcome the attention, but they soon grow weary of having to repeat themselves over and over again. Mostly, it's because they know perfectly well that they're being made fun of, but also because every reporter and interviewer, with the exception of Cynthia, tries to talk them out of believing what they'd seen. There are others, however, that, like Cynthia, don't dismiss their reports so easily. Perhaps none more interesting than Harvard Professor of Psychology, Dr. John Mack. In the early 1990s, Dr. Mack, a well-respected child psychologist, became interested in reports from people who claimed to have been contacted by aliens, a fascination that would eventually lead to a decade-long study on the subject. Initially, Mack wasn't concerned with whether the subjects had been abducted or not. What interested him was simply the sheer scale of the phenomenon. His first assumption was that the so-called witnesses were suffering from some kind of psychological disorder. However, he found that many of his subjects exhibited no sign of this whatsoever. What Mack found especially interesting was how often it seemed that the subject's perspective of the world was completely changed after their apparent encounters. Although often ridiculed for his new obsession, Mack was encouraged by his good friend and pioneering philosopher of science, Thomas Kuhn, to pursue his investigations regardless. Kuhn had himself been at the centre of some controversy years before, with the 1962 publication of his groundbreaking treatise, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. At the time, it was commonly believed that scientific progress was achieved through a steady accumulation of accepted facts and theories. Kuhn, however, believed instead that periods of epistemic continuity were frequently interrupted by complete revolutions of thought. Such revolutions, he argued, opened up new perspectives from which to explore ideas. Kuhn famously described these moments as paradigm shifts. In May 1994, Dr. John Mack, in his capacity as a professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School, published his first set of findings in his book, Abduction: Human Encounters with Aliens. The dean of Harvard Medical School was troubled by Mack's subject matter. Shortly after the book's publication, he appointed a committee to investigate Mack's work for potentially bringing the institution into disrepute. Mack was staggered by the decision, but took solace in his good friend Thomas Kuhn's work. He reasoned that although accounts of apparent alien encounters were incompatible with our current scientific knowledge, we might yet discover them to be real in a way that we don't presently understand. Dr. Mack was ultimately undeterred and vowed to carry on his research.
A pickup truck bed chaos? Meet Decked, game-changing USA-made full bed-length drawers for tools and gear. Waterproof, dustproof, lockable, secure. Whether you're working, hunting, fishing, camping, or just getting out of town. And introducing Decked Deco Cases. Tough, modular, problem-solving cases built for the truck, job site, campsite, or garage. Say goodbye to random bins and tie-downs. Order now at Decked.com/iHeart for free shipping. Decked, your truck, your rules. Decked.com/iHeart.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful Beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
With the investigation into his work ongoing, Dr. Mack decided to expand his research by looking into cases outside of the US. He'd just arranged a trip to South Africa when news of the aerial school incident first broke. Deciding it was too good an opportunity to miss, Mack adjusted his plans and made a visit to the school. Over the course of 2 days, he brought his considerable academic experience to bear on the case. What he discovered there was nothing short of extraordinary. At first, the children were reluctant to go through everything again for Dr. Mack, but the amiable and charismatic professor soon won them over. He began by pulling up a small classroom chair to sit beside them on their level, then questioned them with a clear enthusiasm for the subject. For the children, it seemed as though they recognized something of themselves in him. He was someone they could trust. Time and again, Dr. Mack, like Cynthia, is astonished at how much detail the children apparently remember as they recount their stories to him. Each account, as the teachers later attested, rarely deviated from the accounts the children had first given on that strange Friday morning back in September. Dr. Mack was particularly interested in the reports of those who'd found the event traumatic and for whom the trauma had evidently stayed with them. The following exchanges are taken verbatim from Dr. Mack's recorded interviews with the pupils. Asking one child what scared them most about the incident, she replies it was the noise. "What noise?" asks Dr. Mack gently. "The noise we heard in the air," replies the young girl. As she speaks, Mack can almost see the memory spreading across her face, the fear of it growing from somewhere within her. "What was it like? A roar or a buzz?" he asks. "It was like someone was blowing a flute," she replies enigmatically. To another young girl, Dr. Mack asks, "Where were the eyes?" Just like many others had done before, the girl responds by making that same circular shape with her hands and holds them up to her face. "And what was the feeling when you looked in the eyes?" "The eyes looked evil," said the girl. "What was evil about them?" "It was just staring at me, as if it wanted to come and take me." "Did you want to go with it?" The girl shakes her head as tears begin to well up in her eyes. For Dr. Mack, it's certainly nothing like talking to psychiatric patients who would often seem desperate for him to believe them, or be obviously distorting reality in some way. The minds of the aerial schoolchildren, he believed, were completely sound. In their answers, he can hear a reticence in their voices, suggesting a concern at how what they are saying might be received, and a constant doubt of their own recollections. Dr. Mack is left feeling totally convinced that at the very least, the children genuinely believe what they are describing had truly happened to them. 10-year-old Lisa was one of the first pupils to apparently spot the object and ran across to it with some friends. "I felt scared," she says. "And what was scary about it?" asks Dr. Mack, perched low on a small chair beside her. "I felt scared because I'd never seen a person like that before." Dr. Mack asked Lisa to draw her memory of the event on a blackboard. He watches as she outlines the craft, a bulbous saucer shape with two landing feet and antenna on the top. And next to that, she draws a stick figure with wraparound eyes on the head. What she said next was most astonishing. "What I thought was maybe the world is going to end. Maybe they were telling us the world is going to end." Just as Dr. Mack had found in the accounts of many other so-called experiences, people who believe they have experienced some kind of encounter with an extraterrestrial entity, 10-year-old Lisa appears to have taken some kind of message from the encounter. "And why do you think they would want us to be scared?" "Because maybe we don't look after the planet and the air properly." "Is this an idea that you've had before, that we don't look after the planet properly? Or did this idea come to you when you had this experience?" "When I had this experience," she says. "How?" asks Dr. Mack. "I just felt all horrible inside. It was like in the world, all the trees will just go down, and there'll be no air, and people will be dying." "And how did he get these thoughts across to you?"
"He never said anything, just through the face and the eyes."
"Would you like to see him again?"
"Yes." Do you think you might see him again?
I don't know, she says.
And if you did see him again, what would you do?
I'd ask him what you were doing on Earth and what do you want from us.
She pauses before adding emphatically, I did see it. Young Lisa isn't the only child to have apparently received messages from the being. Emma, who was with her friend Salma at the time, also reports something very similar. As the creature stared at her, she recounts, her heart began beating faster and faster until a thought started to emerge in her mind. I think they want people to know that we're actually making harm on this world, and we mustn't get too tech-knowledged, explains the 10-year-old girl to Dr. Mack. These apparent messages aren't unique to the children of Ariel School. It was something Dr. Mack had come across time and time again in his interviews of the so-called experiences. With striking regularity, many of Dr. Mack's case studies reported being warned about humanity's destruction of the environment, leading Mack to suspect that in one way or another, this was central to the abduction experience. Dr. Mack eventually concluded his interviews in Africa and returned to the US. After 14 months, the Harvard investigation into his academic credibility was eventually brought to an end, resulting in a complete exoneration and reaffirmation from the university dean that Mack had the freedom to study what he wishes and to state his opinions without impediment. As for the pupils of Ariel School, the media interest eventually died down and the children returned to focusing on their studies. Although the story would eventually drift from the public consciousness, the children never forgot what happened on that peculiar day in September 1994. Now adults, with jobs and children of their own, with some emigrating to distant corners of the world, while others remained in Zimbabwe, not one of those 60-odd pupils has revealed the story to have been a hoax. Many continue to speak about it to this day, and some still seemingly suffer from the trauma. And all have watched with increasing horror, year on year, as those warnings of impending ecological disaster have grown ever more prescient with each passing day.
This episode was written by Richard McLean Smith. Unexplained is an AV Club Productions podcast created by Richard McLean Smith. All other elements of the podcast, including the music, are also produced by me, Richard McLean Smith. Unexplained, the book and audiobook, with stories never before featured on the show, is now available to buy worldwide. You can purchase from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Waterstones and other bookstores. Please subscribe to and rate the show wherever you get your podcasts, and feel free to get in touch with any thoughts or ideas regarding the stories you've heard on the show. Perhaps you have an explanation of your own you'd like to share. You can find out more at unexplainedpodcast.com and reach us online through Twitter at unexplainedpod and Facebook at facebook.com/unexplainedpodcast.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of pickup truck bed chaos? Meet Decked, game-changing USA-made full bed-length drawers for tools and gear. Waterproof, dustproof, lockable, secure. Whether you're working, hunting, fishing, camping, or just getting out of town. And introducing Decked Deco Cases. Tough, modular, problem-solving cases built for the truck, job site, campsite, or garage. Say goodbye to random bins and tie-downs. Order now at Decked.com/iHeart for free shipping. Decked. Your truck, your rules. Decked.com/iHeart.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.